Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello. Welcome to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, your host and the founder of Women of Wisdom. We have been empowering women through an annual conference every February since 1993. And this year is our 27th year. It's in Seattle, Washington, and the dates are February 15th to the 17th. We are getting very close now. Our theme is Spark Our Creative Fire, Dance in Power and Beauty. So you can come for the whole weekend. You can come for just a day, Saturday or Sunday, experience in-depth workshops, lots of different topics, creative art, spirituality, meditation, movement, manifestation, you name it, we've got it. Your registration fee includes meals as well and community times together and a special banquet on Saturday evening. So we invite you to join us and be witnessed, valued, and inspired. Just check out the schedule at womenofwisdom.org. And we have a special evening Friday, an opening Friday night is a new musical. It's called Nightingale, a musical regarding the life and passion of Miss Florence Nightingale by Pamela Gerke. And all this is happening at North Seattle College. So again, go to womenofwisdom.org and look for the 2019 conference. So today I'm interviewing Lavanya Reddy. She's given a workshop Sunday, February 17th. It's called Invoke the Creator in You. Lavanya Reddy is a meditator for 40 years and a meditation teacher. She's the founder, president of Federation of Indian Associations in Washington, the secretary of the National Federation of Indian Associations, and founder of Srimani Yama Educational and Cultural Foundation. She's presented Montessori teachers workshops in New York, Minneapolis, Houston, and Seattle, and gives workshops in values education for young children. So welcome, Lavanya.
Good afternoon, Chris. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yes. Well, let's start with your story. And you grew up in India. So let's just start there. I mean, we imagine that to be such a spiritual place, country, and we have visions of that. Tell us about how it was growing up in a country such as India.
Yes, thank you. My parents both were very, very spiritual, and they used to host lots of spiritual-oriented people. So from childhood, I was exposed to lots of yogis and philosophers. My mother used to meditate regularly, and my father, as a doctor, used to believe serving human beings is like serving God. Okay, so I adopted both of them from my mom, the meditation, and my father, like serving people at his dharma. So I followed that path from both of them together. And growing up in India was a boon, I feel, because India is the oldest civilization that had noblest potentialities of mental, spiritual, and religious, and intellectual, and ethical, and aesthetic beliefs, and values, and virtues. It's not separated, it's blended in the society where I grew up. And elders realize the importance of exposing children from the birth. So karma, dharma, rituals, caring and sharing, and acceptance, and festivals. And we saw births and we saw deaths in the families. And it's a great package as I was growing up, was exposed to it. And it was amazing how Indian civilization is blended. I didn't know what is religion or what is the social life. It wasn't separated for me. I grew up with values of it.
Yeah, I love it's not separated. My sense was that I traveled to India in 1984 and a whole year in Asia. And there was that feeling that they touched the ground. They were living their spirituality. It was a daily thing, not just we go to church on Sunday. And so it's really blended,
right,
as you say. Yeah. So was there a
you
teacher?
You can't separate it.
Yeah, you can't separate it. Yes. And I think a lot of us are trying to achieve that. It's just so hard in our Western culture. There's so much externally, you know, impacting us. So we're so much in the to-do mode and get things done that we sort of compartmentalize our life. Okay, there's one area, spirituality, and another area is our work, and then family. It's all compartmentalized, you know. So imagine, so how was it coming to here to the United States for you then? Was that pretty much, was that a big culture shock?
It was. It was. I remember my brother-in-law took me to Chicago, the CS Tower, and within 2 days after coming, and he asked me, how do you feel? You feel great being in America with all these buildings. And I said, I feel lonely in America. That's what the vibrations I get. That's what I told him within 2 days of coming. And because it's really isolated. Each individual lives their own life, not like in Indian culture where we are together all the time. And when you connect with somebody, you know that they follow the same rules and righteousness and things like that. So you don't identify yourself different, right? And being different, like, you know, coming from a different country, you tend to feel that way anyhow. And like another thing is, it's amazing how busy people are here. See, my family, even if they work at the end of the evening, daddy comes home and we all eat together or go to a movie together. At least twice a week, we go out with the family. And I've seen that it happens only weekend, and it's restricted like that. So it was amazing to me to see that. Another thing is I was puzzled when I see kids say bored or tired. Those words we never heard as a kid. Even as an adult, it's not accepted to say those words, because it comes from your own thoughts. It's how you look at the thing, to be bored or tired, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to me, those two words, children using it. And then and afterwards, now I understand why people are different. In, like, each land has its own speciality. I think when they're growing up in the womb, the magnetic field of that country and vibrations influence baby in the tummy itself. So the kids are born, even my own kids are my, like, Indian kids here when I watch them. They seem to be independent and detached from childhood. They don't have that belongingness. I think this land gives them that gift of detachment. And that is the reason I think when Americans become yogis or meditators, they seem to progress faster than us sometimes.
Faster than you as an Indian?
Nature. Yes. Hmm. Yes. When they focus it. Like, that is really interesting. When they do it, they do 100%, right? See, for me, I balance it with my life and with my marriage and with, like, I balance it, everything, my job and everything. It seems to be when they really come in, they're 100% renunciates and they go to it, that one path, like linearly approach it. And I think I've seen them progress really good. So even my kids, children, when they concentrate it 100% to it.
Mm-hmm. But do you think something is lost in that? And you're talking about having a balance of family and life and meditating and spirituality. If they're going 100% in this, you know, meditation and spirituality, is there something lost?
You know, it is the level of the person, right? Spirit where it is. The journey is for human to become divine, right? That is a transformation we need to do. That is the purpose of our life in general. So, but if they can achieve it, it's wonderful. They don't have attachments and karmic bondages to hold them.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about karma. You mentioned it. Yeah, I want you to talk about karma and just explain from your point of view what that means and how that impacts a person's life.
So the karma is the action. We all do actions. Earth is called karma bhumi, the field for action. So when we are in the soul world, we stay still. We are in a meditative or a seed stage. We don't have thoughts. We don't have actions, everything. So that is the reason we desire to come on Earth, because it's action field. It's a karma land, land of karma. So when we come, everything we do is karma. And the karma is divided into three places, three parts. One is bad one, negative effect. One is positive. One is neutral. The negative one is when you hurt people, when you, like, do something against your dharmas. It's called as a negative karma. And then when you do good things, you help people, your thoughts are good. It's not karma is even with your thoughts you have to be careful with. if you think about negative about somebody, it's a bad karma because you're sending negative vibrations to that person. And if you're a powerful person, if you're thinking negative about somebody, it becomes a curse, right? It's in a way you're wishing bad for that person. Words and deeds. And then neutral ones are like if you take care of your body, you take bath, you eat, it's a neutral. It doesn't have any effect on it. And then good karma, whenever, whatever you do, you say like a physics, for every action, there is equal and opposite reaction. So then what happens is if you're doing good karma, you're putting good seeds. So tomorrow, the results would be good for you. If you're doing bad karma, that would come back to you too, equal force, one way or other. So that is the reason it has to be like in very cautious. That is what is a spirituality is paying attention to it, aware of it every second of it.
Right.
You need to
watch
your parts, you need to
Even our thoughts. We don't realize how much our thoughts impact. Our thoughts go up there in the universe, go out there and they travel and then they land on somebody who might act on those thoughts. So if you have bad thoughts, and also my understanding of sending energy out, it comes back to you tenfold. So that's the karma reaction of, you know, so if you're having a bad thought, you can't avoid it. Yeah. Well, thank you for all that. That's, I think, really helpful. And so your workshop's on invoking the creator. What does that mean to invoke the creator?
See, by nature, we are divine. We are divine because we are not bodies. Okay? So the spirit in ourselves is like in the Bible, if they say God created human being in his image. Okay? But the image is not the physical body. The spirit is his image. That is why in every culture, we say we are brothers, not because of the body relationship, because we are children of the creator. And then all of us have that divinity in us. When we first came from earth, like, you know, from the soul world, when we first entered into the earth atmosphere, we created everything that's around us. The beauty of the earth or anything we created with our thought process. We think something that would happen, like we were very pure beings at that point, right? When we came from soul world, we were God children. We are very, very pure, very, very perfect beings. They used to, even children, they used to create with the thought. So any Indian mythology or anything, even like Jesus' birth, is a spiritual birth. It's not physical birth, right? It's a child of spirit, not child of physical sex born, no. So that is what it is. When they came in, even they used to create the children with the spirituality. If you take Bharatam, all the Pandavas, the five virtuous heroes in Bharatam, they're spiritual beings. They're not born to the physical contact. They're powerful. They're strong. So when they're pure, they were stronger. And then as the earth going around, then we got more materialistic. We become body conscious. We lose that divinity in us. We forget our divinity. I don't think we lose it. We forget.
We forget who we are
and what we are. We forget. It's like, we call it Maya. It's like a cloud covers you up. So when you meditate, what you do is you clear these stuff out. And then you realize you're a divine being. Once if you realize you're a divine being, and then your body, mind, emotion are together, spirit together, you become creator again. Whatever you want, you focus those four like energies together, you create it. You can make it happen.
Right. So you're talking about being in alignment, you know, spiritual, emotional, mental, physical. It's all in alignment with your spirit, with your soul. And then you are a co-creator. I like to call it a co-creator. That's invoking that creator within you.
Yes.
That we all have this. And you're right. We forget. It's a veil. It's like we come in here. There's a veil, and we have to. Part of life is reclaiming all that. Remembering. You know, it's a journey of remembering
who you are. who you are, and what you are, and where you came from. Simple as that.
Yeah. Simple, but sometimes in this human body, yeah, it doesn't feel so simple because we're going through all our stuff.
See, that it is like that. That is what it is. It pulls you down.
Mm-hmm.
It's the matter pulls you down. So when you go beyond the matter, that is what meditation is for. To realize that, to experience that divinity in you. More inner you go, more time you spend with yourself. You realize all your powers and all your virtues, all your strength. So you can be very powerful with it. You can be very powerful. And then another thing, karma is, if you're putting good seeds, it's inevitable your tomorrow would be beautiful and good. Nobody can take your goodness from you. Nobody can steal it. So today is very important. Present is whatever you're doing. You need to watch it so that tomorrow would be a good thing. So you're creating tomorrow today. So that's what it is. And then think about even human body. We eat food, right? For example, I eat a banana. And then minute I eat banana and it goes into my body, digest it. And what is that banana becomes? It becomes blood. It becomes cells. So your body is amazing too in creation. Right? It's creating without you knowing about it, without even you talking about it.
Yes, and so it's always ongoing. They say the cells change every 7 years. You have whole new cells in your body. And so if you know that, that means you can change. You don't have to be the same body, the same person.
You don't
in
have
a way.
To be the same. Your DNA changes.
Actually, yeah, but our mindset keeps us there.
Pardon? So that is what it is. Self-sovereignty, right, is the key. What is self-sovereignty means? Controlling your senses. You're the ruler of your own body. The soul needs to be the ruler of all your desires, all your everything, ruler of the body. When the body, that soul is the ruler, you do everything spiritual. When you do spiritually, you get that happiness automatically. You are happy, you're loving, you, all the virtues are natural for you. You realize those are very, they come out as a natural thing from you.
And that's coming from that sense. I love the word you were saying, that, you know, the purity of the soul, that we come in here pure, and then we tend to lose it. We get you know, we get involved in life and the things, the ups and downs and all our feelings and having to sort of think everything out. And
because you think that the body is you. The role you're playing is you. Then that becomes attachment to the body. Right? Attachment pulls you down, material thing. Because our body is made with 5 elements. And when you think that's you, it traps you. Your body traps your soul, actually. So one of the things in meditation is, first, I'm not this body, I'm a soul. That's the first thing you realize, you meditate on in any meditation. You're not the body, you're a soul. Right? So when a soul, like when somebody says, my hand did this, who is saying that? Soul is saying this, my hand is doing it, as if it's separate an identity. Right? Like, my child did this, my hand did this. I did it, we don't say it, my hand did it, or I heard this with my ear. That's a soul she's talking. So most of the time we hush it. And it always guides you right path. And you give chance for this, if you listen to your soul, it always guides us to the right path.
Mm-hmm. So that's the key, listening to the soul. So that's that inward journey, that's that meditation. And we have to be here in our body. You're not saying, well, we're just a soul, we're not here in our body. We're here in our body. Yeah.
You see, without body, you cannot, spirit cannot progress. See, as I said, in the Indian mythology, Nara becomes Narayan. That means human being becoming divine or equal to God is our journey. Cannot do it without body. The body is, that's why it's called temple. Without it, you cannot progress. soul cannot progress.
Mm-hmm.
That is the right reason we take body. But in Bhagavad Gita, it says a jnani soul makes each and every action as a pure action, or a holy action, or good karma. But for example, if I'm giving food to my son, if I say I am serving the other soul, ancient soul, who is in my son's body, okay, and then it becomes good karma to you. If you say it's my son I'm feeding for him, okay, then it doesn't earn any good karma for you. So when you're doing everything as a service, it becomes good karma. So in Bhagavad Gita, it says, jnani changes every action into good karma.
It's interesting. So it's really recognizing in each other the divine, the God within each other, and honoring, approaching, you know, all our thoughts, all our conversations, all the things we do for others, is in honoring, that's what I'm hearing you say, honoring of that divine soul.
In others.
Yeah, and so much we just look at the physical, we just look at that person, well, I don't like the way she looks, I don't like her, I don't like the way she talks, and we're not seeing past, well, sometimes the causes of why they're that way, they're caught in their karma, they're caught in their life circumstances, but we're not seeing beyond that. We're getting caught up in the illusion that they are this human body and not seeing the soul in that person.
Yeah, because spirituality doesn't allow you to judge anybody. So you have to accept them as it is. Counts are settlements they are going through. You don't know. So
no,
you have
we don't.
To stay detached. Mm-hmm. You have to detach. See, that's why they say that watch it as a drama. Right? You sit in the chair, but for example, you're watching a movie. You assume one of the people and you cry with them, you laugh at them. What are you doing? You're becoming a part of the drama, right? But a spiritual person has to detach themselves. They need to stay away from it and watch it as a drama. Then it won't affect you.
Yeah, to not get caught. We tend to get caught in the drama. People like drama.
Yes, right. Right. Especially I've seen people watching soap opera and they're so involved. It's always surprising to me to see that.
Mm-hmm.
They're really like involved and they get mad at that person. She did this, he did that, and I used to laugh at it. They're so involved with it. They're going through the ups and downs with the characters of that drama. And the same earth is like a drama field.
Yeah, and it may be a way for them to release those feelings in themselves. That they, you know, it's the only way they could do it by seeing some other drama, so they can cry with that and release some of their emotions, not knowing kind of what they're doing. But it is kind of funny. You're laughing about it. But let's talk about, because another aspect of the workshop is self-realization. Let's talk a little more about what that means for you.
Yeah, self-realization is self, as it sounds. Knowing yourself, self-realization, you're realizing yourself. That self is soul for me, or the spirit, right? And then when you know it, you're a spiritual being, you're unlimited, you're eternal. And all the virtues, like love, peace, happiness, your basic qualities, your original qualities. So whatever happens, nothing would affect you. Like, you know, that is the reason we call it, like in spirituality, lotus plays a big role in any culture. The reason is lotus is born from mud, right? It's muddy. And when it raises up, you never see mud on a lotus flower. It's always go above the mud. See, life is like that. Whatever happens, you need to stay away from that mud. You shouldn't let it touch you, bother you, affect you. So in a way, self-realization gives you that opportunity to yourself from the body, or bodily suffering, or illness, deaths, and everything. It raises you above that. And that gives you the strength and the power, unlimited power. That energy has great power. And more you realize, more you spend, your powers increase. It's amazing, like, you know, simplest things become easy. And you wish, like, I wish I want that. It appears surprisingly. Many times I smile to myself. And then it makes me realize my negative thoughts would have that effect too. I had to be very, very, very cautious not to produce any negative, because not only drains my energy, but the effect would be negative too. And so that's
yeah.
what it works like a ledger being. When you meditate and if you self-realize, when you focus on something, it's like a ladder, it hits and it happens.
I couldn't catch that word. It's a what?
Like a ladder. It's concentrated light, ladder. It's like
laser, yeah.
It makes
okay.
it happen. Yeah, ladder beam. It is like powerful,
mm-hmm.
right? Same light.
Mm-hmm.
When it's broader, it doesn't affect. When you focus it in a dot, it's very powerful. So that
mm-hmm.
is the reason we say we merge it. Spirituality merging is one of the best things to do. So when things, instead of expanding it, whatever happened, you merge it. Because what happens is you waste your energy. Something happens. If you prolong on it, you expanding it, you're wasting your energy and your thoughts. The most precious thing we have is thoughts and the time. And those two are most precious things. They are most valuable things for our soul, like, you know, spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be very, very cautious how we use it.
Right. Well, and we all know people that, well, there's that victim mentality that all this happens to me, it's very negative, it just keeps happening to me, and that just keeps increasing all the negativity because, you know, you're focusing on the negative. So, you know, how do you help a person get out of that, get out of that cycle? Because it's patterns, and some of it's
okay.
from a really young age.
Right. So what it is you listen to that person, but at the same time, give her the knowledge of being a soul. And what the soul do. So if they can spend few minutes, okay, in the morning and the evening, few minutes, 5 minutes, remembering it, I'm a soul. I'm not this body, okay? And nothing that would happen to my body would affect me. And things like that, you meditate on it. One thought, you take it. And then the morning. So morning is the most important thing. When you wake up, our mind is fresh. You're putting foundation for the day. So whatever you think in the first few minutes of your waking up is have most effect on the rest of the day. So we tell them, so think positive. Like, encourage them to think positive about themselves. Focus on the quality they have. Or if they're mad at somebody, what positive quality they have in that other person. Remember that part. Then what happens is when you're remembering in a positive way, it makes you happy, actually. Whenever you're complaining, it drains your energy, right? Whenever you're thinking about something negative, like even somebody died or somebody something, listen to it and take it, it bothers you. The same way when we say positively about something, for example, I have problem of thinking negative, okay? I'm complaining about my job or something. The morning, oh, my job is like this. But instead of it, you say, okay, whatever it comes, it's drama, and I'm going to play my part. I'm going to face it. Then it will be easier than complaining about it, number one. Number two is another thing is we do in Raja Yoga is we encourage people 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the evening before they go to bed. And then every 1 hour, we have a reminder. We have a one clock like thing. And then 1 minute, we go back to our center. I'm a soul. I'm not this. So what happens is it detaches you whatever happening in your life. That's 1 minute and 1 second. You go back
mm-hmm.
to your centeredness. So that
right.
increases your power each time. So next 1 hour, I'm okay with it, right? I'm focusing, okay, I'm soul. I need to pay attention to what I say, what I do, what I think. That concentrated increases my ability. Like, it's only 1 hour, right? It's easier rather than thinking the whole day. Every 1 hour, we remind ourselves.
Yeah, just a minute. And, you know, it reminds me of, like, stopping at when you're at a street light, you're waiting for the light. I always say to my
right.
husband, that's the time to meditate. You know, don't close your eyes, you're
right,
driving.
Right,
you
that's
could,
what
you
I
can
do.
Have that. You can have that silent moment.
You don't have to close your eyes either.
No.
See, in Raja Yoga, one of the things is we don't have to close to meditate ourselves. Meditation is with the mind and the intellect and soul, right? You don't have to close it. So eyes are physical. So you don't need eyes to close it, but to close your eyes so that you don't get any stimuli from outside. But in Raja Yoga, what we do is we use open-eyed meditation, we call it. So when you open, but your mind, intellect is working on it. It's focusing on the soul. It's not focusing on anything else outside. So that helps. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you can take that break. Right? So we do that every 1 hour. Mm-hmm. That's our practice.
Right. And especially like you're having a rough day, you're dealing with colleagues at work that are, you know, asking a lot of you, or you're getting the negative things, you know, coming towards you from others, is that reminder of, you know, to take that minute, because you can do that. And it takes intention. You have to remember to do that. And so it's a focus.
Yes. So most of it, they have alarm. It goes at a bell on the cell phone. It goes clink every 1 hour.
Oh, yeah, that would remind you. So good. It's also there are some meditation apps, too, that you can set to even record the time that you meditate, the amount of time. So you're suggesting like 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes at night.
Before you go to bed, and every 1 hour in the middle. And then when you eat. See, there's another thing is in Raja Yoga or in meditation, usually vibrations, everything produces vibration. Thoughts, right? So when you're eating, right, when somebody is cooking, whatever they're thinking, their vibration is going in the food.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in Indian culture, actually they never eat outside. And usually the person who cooks is the oldest person in the house, who is mature enough to remember God and meditate while cooking. So whoever eats it, they get that vibration of meditation and things like that. And then in any culture, another thing is when you have food, you look at it and you thank God, right? You do your prayer.
Right.
Many cultures do that. Even in Hindus, we do that. We offer to God and say, bless this food and let it give us energy and things like that. So it's good to do that. Purify your food and water. Whenever you're drinking water, give it good. I say, let this water give me energy. Let this water give me, purity and purify my body and give me good health. Every time you drink, you need to remember that with a positive thinking. You send those vibrations into your body and it becomes part of you.
Right, and they have those studies of even writing words on the bottles, positive words of warm water. The same thing as thought, the water vibration.
It's in Indian culture a long time.
Yeah.
In Indian culture a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
well, we're just learning here. We're a little slow here on the plane on our Western world, but I think we're getting there. And I like it. You know, I love to cook, and I know when I'm feeling really good and I'm cooking for other people and really enjoying it, you just know the food's going to be great. You're putting your energy into it. And so that's what you're talking about. You're putting that loving energy. If you hate cooking and you're stirring, you're mad, or maybe you're angry and you have to cook dinner and you're angry, you know, think of what you're putting, you know, that energy is going into the food.
Yes, Another thing is, like, for example, that mostly as our vegetarians, the reason is if an animal is killed in a slaughterhouse, right? In India, when they kill, it is they follow like one cut, that's it. And that animal, which is raised, it's very comfortable with owner. It's raised free. It trusts, right? So in a way, when they cut, it's one cut, they don't feel pain. But in slaughterhouses and things like that, if they're going through stress or pain and all the tension and fear, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when they're killed, the hormones are in those meats. And whoever is eating it, they would get it too. We have to be cautious where you eat, where you get the food from.
And there is some people who are growing, raising animals like that, and are doing a humane way of killing them, not
right.
going to the slaughterhouse. And so there,
right.
I think there's some awareness about that. And so it really depends
right.
on, you know, look at where you're buying your meat. Where is it coming from? Who is raising it?
Yeah,
there's
so in
places.
Indian culture, we never buy from outside. Like, for example, my husband's family is farming, self-sufficient. But I used to tell him, don't kill for me. When I go, oh, we would do that. And I said, no, not vegetarian. I would tell them from always. So this to save a life, right? It's for me, I'm thinking about our karma all the time. And then I would say, no, don't do that. I'm vegetarian. And even, like, you know, my mother used to teach us to take a flower, like to worship God or anything, we offer flowers in the morning. And my mother would say, you need to ask permission from the plant before you pluck the flower. If you pluck the flower to worship, like offer to God, you can say, I'm offering for God. May I take some? And you take it. The same with vegetables. You need to communicate to the plants, I'm taking some to nourish my body. And then you take it. Then even that way, you get blessings from the plants too. They
yes,
seem really narrow in Indian culture. It's really, 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 you know, more I look into it, as my mother, and then as a 3 years old or 2 years old, if they try to step on an ant or a bug, immediately my mother would say, don't do that. Do you like if a monster stepping? You're like a monster to that ant stepping in it. Immediately I used to, like, you know, remember that. Like, you know, it shocks you as a child. If you say that, right? So every time you want to kill a bug or something, you think about it. It's like, you know, it's in a way being gentle with other creatures. Plants, they teach you. And then we worship, like, you know, some holidays we go and put, like, you know, colors and garlands to the animals, cows and whatever we have. And some holidays we put around the trees. Snakes, rats, whatnot. To Indian mythology has every creature, they have their own space and their respect for them.
Respect, yes.
Yes.
Yes, and that is so needed, particularly now we're losing so many species. I was just hearing about Australia because it's so hot down there that They're losing a lot of the species. They're dying off. It's I guess they're in extreme heat. Well, you have given us so much to think about, Lavanya. I appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you for giving me my opportunity.
Yeah, so everybody, check out her workshop, Invoke the Creator in You. It's Sunday, February 17th, and you'll just get to hear more wisdom from Lavanya and meditations. She'll be doing meditations. She'll be guiding you in how to find that self-realization and how to invoke the Creator in you, because it's all within us. We all have it. So, so check everything out at the Women of Wisdom website, www.womenofwisdom.org. Everything's held at North Seattle College, February 15th to the 17th. It's very intimate, experiential, three-hour workshops with community meals and group activities and lots of great connections that we make in between the workshops, during the workshops. So it's very transformational. So I'm getting excited for next weekend. So we'll talk then. Lavanya, we'll see you then. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.